From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. An American Rivers report recently identified the Cape Fear and Neuse Rivers as two of the top 10 most endangered in the United States. A 2016 study of the presence of hexavalent chromium in drinking water by the Environmental Working Group found levels higher than it considers safe in the tap water of more than 200 million Americans. This is the same toxin that first landed on the national radar in the early 1990s, when Aaron Brockovich successfully sued a large utility for contaminating the drinking water supply. The Environmental Protection Agency said in 2010 it was reviewing its standards. As of now, there is no specific limit for chromium 6 in drinking water. California is the only state that has set what it calls a public health goal. In the EWG study, New Hanover County is listed as having two out of three water systems showing chromium 6 in the water. California's public standard is 0.02 parts per billion. New Hanover County shows an average of 0.0110. Brunswick County, on the other hand, shows an average of 0.0815, four times the level California considers acceptable. Today, we're going to find out where local water comes from and how the people in charge of your drinking water treat it before it comes out of your tap. Joining us now is Lawrence B. Cahoon, professor of biology and marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. He is also on the board of Cape Fear River Watch. Professor Cahoon, welcome to Coastline.
Good to see you again.
And with us now also is the Director of Environmental Management for Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, Beth Eckert. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we'd like you to be a part of this conversation. Do you have a question about your local water supply? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Beth Eckert of the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. Just so folks can understand what this recent American Rivers report and endangered rivers has to do with local drinking water, explain to us where CFPUA gets its water from before it treats it.
Okay. Our water does come from the Cape Fear River. Now, our water, although we're in New Hanover County, our water comes from 24 miles up the river at Lock and Dam 1. It's just above Lock and Dam 1, and we have a raw water transmission line that pumps the water to our Sweeney Water Treatment Plant, which is here in Wilmington. And that water is treated there, where we go through a pre-ozone process, coagulation, various other processes with ozone, UV, removing metals, removing organics, removing all the different processes before it is put back into the distribution system to go to the customers.
So that raw water line that catches the water at Lock and Dam 1, that's like a straw that sort of displaces it before it flows down the...
It's a 24-inch. We have multiple sources from up there, but it's a 24-inch line. We have a line that comes from there. Lower Cape Fear River Water and Sewer Authority, who we also purchase water from, they have a line that comes from the same location, and it is. It's like a straw in the river. And because we are at the end of the river, Cape Fear River goes way up into the middle of North Carolina, that basin does. So we are at the end, we're the last straw in the river as far as our drinking water goes. So anything that comes down that river, we have to have the ability to treat in order to ensure public drinking water. So,
and in just a moment, I'm going to ask you to get into the weeds of some of those treatment processes. But first, Professor Cahoon, can you kind of explain the pathway of the Cape Fear River and what a river basin is? Because
right.
That's one of the things we're hearing about, too,
right.
In this report.
We call it a basin or a watershed. And the Cape Fear River watershed extends all the way up into the central part of the Piedmont. The Cape Fear proper is formed by the confluence of the Deep River and the Haw River just below Jordan Lake. But the Deep and the Haw, in turn, drain all the way up towards Greensboro in that area, Alamance County and so forth. So it's a big river. It's the biggest river basin or watershed in North Carolina that's wholly within the state's boundaries. And it encompasses a population of somewhere over 2 million people. So we're on the downstream end of an awful lot of discharges, we'll say.
And speaking of those discharges, in this American Rivers report, it seems to almost exclusively put the cause of this, what it calls being endangered, polluters, pollution, it attributes this to concentrated animal feeding operations that are upriver.
Right.
Can you explain the connection there?
You have to pull things apart a bit. Here in Wilmington, we're downstream of the main stem of the Cape Fear River. Again, that comes from up in the Piedmont area. We're also downstream of the Black River and the Northeast Cape Fear. We don't get our drinking water from those latter two rivers. They all join the Cape Fear River right around here in Wilmington. Matter of fact, you know, within a quarter mile of where we're sitting. It's important to understand that the Black River and the Northeast Cape Fear River watersheds are primarily agricultural, whereas the Cape Fear River proper is not primarily an agricultural watershed, not to the degree the others are. Put it another way, for the Cape Fear proper, the main stem of the river, about 50% of all the nutrients coming downstream come from Jordan Lake. Well, most of that is not agricultural. In the Black River and the Northeast Cape Fear, however, the vast majority of the nutrients getting into those rivers would be agricultural.
So when we look at this American Rivers report and it talks about being endangered, is it talking about this area where at the confluence, where they all come together?
I'm not sure that they separated those three river channels or streams as clearly as I would have liked. I think their sense of endangerment is that we have reached a situation where the nutrient loading in the streams, the nutrient loading in the main stem Cape Fear is not trivial, but again, it's not primarily agricultural. But the nutrient loading in general has reached a point where these rivers are being impacted. You see algae blooms. You see extensive plant growth. You see problems from lower dissolved oxygen than we'd like to see in order to support aquatic life. So there are issues there. And if it gets worse, we'll experience more problems.
Beth Eckert of Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. A few minutes ago, you mentioned a host of different water treatment processes. Can you tell us what list those processes for us and tell us what they do?
Okay. Here in New Hanover County and City CFPUA, we are the successor to the New Hanover County Sewer District and the City of Wilmington Water and Wastewater Utility. And they had the foresight many years ago to invest in infrastructure here because they knew we were the last straw in the river and that we cannot regulate what is upstream. We have to react to what does come down. So our predecessors and CFPUA moving forward has invested millions of dollars in infrastructure and ensuring that we had the best available technology to meet drinking water standards and to ensure public health as it goes out. In doing so, that best available technology, which we have found to be very effective on processes such as the chromium and various other metals and organics and things like that, but we have a pre-ozone process. Ozone is one of the most advanced treatment disinfection type of processes that you can have. We have a pre-ozone process and we have a coagulation process where we add chemicals to enhance the coagulation to settle out and oxidize metals and superpulsators. And then we also have a post-ozone and UV disinfection and biological filters, all of which go in to further disinfect the water, to further clean it, further remove metals, organics. We do testing on the raw water as it comes in. We adjust our ozone. We adjust our chemical feed based on the data of the raw water that is coming down the river, and we're able to respond to fluctuations that way. And that way we ensure that public health is preserved on the back end.
How does water quality fluctuate? Is it different from day to day, that raw water quality?
It can be because During rain events, the water may change. During various discharges, different times of the year, during hot weather times, you may have more algal blooms and that kind of thing in the water. You may have more solids coming down, inorganics or things coming down during heavy rain events or flooding events like hurricanes and things like that. And so it fluctuates. One of our key indicators on that is TOC, which is our total organic carbon that's done on the raw water. And that gives us a very good indication of how we need to make adjustments within the plant to ensure that we meet all the drinking water standards going out.
You said that, so you have to react quickly to things that are coming down the river.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, Larry Cahoon, you made it very clear that the CAFOs are not coming down the river into the straw that Cape Fear Public Utility Authority is using to suck off its water supply.
Right.
But what are some of the things upstream, Beth Eckert, or either of you?
I would say that, you know, it's a broader mix of things in the main stem Cape Fear. There's some agricultural input. It's just not as pronounced as you find in the Black River and the Northeast Cape Fear, which are heavily impacted. You get industrial discharges. You get a lot of sediment runoff into the main stem Cape Fear. It's a lot dirtier in that sense than the Black or the Northeast Cape Fear. Their waters tend to be clearer. So the treatment challenge is pretty broad, and the PUA does a really good job of it. And I'm not just saying that to make nice with Beth here.
But we appreciate that.
They really do a good job of this, and it is very advanced technology. It really has to be.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, learning about the local drinking water supply, primarily for New Hanover and Brunswick counties. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from the Brunswick County Public Utilities Director and the Executive Director of H2GO. They're taking your questions this Wednesday. Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. The phone lines are now open. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. The Cape Fear and Neuse Rivers are in the top 10 list for most endangered rivers in America, according to a recent analysis from American Rivers, an environmental advocacy group. Today, we're learning about the evolving practice of water treatment and how the local drinking water supply comes down the Cape Fear River and ends up in your tap. With us now, John Nichols. He's the director of Brunswick County Public Utilities. John Nichols, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
And we also have Bob Walker, executive director of Brunswick Regional Water and Sewer, also known as H2GO. Bob Walker, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And Beth Eckert, director of environmental management for CFPUA, is still with us. Welcome back, Beth.
Thank you.
Just before we went to break, you, Beth, had gotten into a description of some of the water treatment processes that CFPUA takes the raw water through. You also recently engaged in an exercise. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, and this goes to the last question that you asked as well about the water that's coming down the river and what we might could expect. And one of the things that we do, we do a lot of tabletop exercise here at CFPUA because we do need to be able to respond in our emergency situations.
What is tabletop exercise?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Where we sit down and we can run through what if this happens? How would we respond? What would we do? And in this preparation, one of the more recent exercises that we did was we looked at if there was a tractor trailer up in the middle part of the state where we were talking about earlier, where any contaminants come down, because like I said, we're the last straw in the river. These contaminants, it could be a chemical truck or a train car derailment, anything that might could come into the river. And we did a tabletop exercise of a tanker load of benzene coming down the river. Well, in doing that, we also have a model that we have staff that has learned to run this model. It's called Icy Water, which we got from EPA and Homeland Security, where you can model the contaminant that's in the water. You can look at how the concentrations that it goes into the water, the flow of the river, the concentrations, the volume, and look to see how long it's going to take to get to your intake, what type of proper actions do you need to take to protect yourselves from it. And this was prompted from, it was in West Virginia where they had this spill back up there back a couple years ago. And, you know, you can look at that and say, okay, as long as we know that this has happened, you model it, you know if you need to turn your intake off or if it's going to be
a... So you can just cut that straw off.
We can turn our pumps off and not take that water into our influent. It preserves our infrastructure and protects public health. And then once that's passed, because you can model the river and model how long it's going to take to pass in those concentrations, then you can turn your straw back on, your pumps back on. So, and then, or you can also look at it and say, okay, well, by the time it gets here with the dilution factors and the water in the river, it's going to pass through our system and not compromise public health. We can respond to this without turning that off. So it allows us to make, it's another tool in our toolbox to be able to allow us to make informed, educated decisions about our processes, our treatment processes, and how we operate. So.
John Nichols of Brunswick County Public Utilities. There are, first of all, tell us what the source is of Brunswick County's water supply. Where does it come from?
We actually have two sources. We have two water treatment plants. One is a 24 million gallon per day plant, the Northwest Water Treatment Plant. And we receive the same source water that CFPUA receives from the Lower Cape Fear Water and Sewer Authority raw water main. We also have a 6 million gallon per day plant that is in the Southport area. It is a groundwater plant, so we're utilizing wells for getting that water.
And where are those wells located?
They are located in the Southport area adjacent to the water treatment plant, and they go into the Castle Hayne Aquifer.
And Bob Walker, Executive Director of H2GO. For those folks who have not been following closely, there's been a lot in the news about H2GO and your movement towards building your own reverse osmosis plant. But why are there two water utilities in Brunswick County, Bob Walker?
I think back in the 70s, there were a group of residents who lived in the Leland area that wanted water systems. And at the time, the county didn't have any public water available, so those residents created the Leland Sanitary District in hopes that, you know, at some point a public water supply would become available. And I think back in the early 80s, Brunswick County Public Utilities was created or established a water intake from the Cape Fear River and put a treatment plant in, and that was the first source of the water for the distribution system in the Leland area.
And so where does H2GO get its water now?
We buy finished water from Brunswick County Public Utilities.
At this point in the game, is that a redundant kind of, is that an extra layer that isn't necessary?
I wouldn't say that it's not a redundant system. We provide the distribution of the water to the greater Leland area or Northeast Brunswick area.
And why has H2GO been moving towards building its own reverse osmosis plant, which, as we know, is a very expensive project? I think the last estimate I heard was around $29 million. Is that right?
Yeah, the all-in cost would be about $29 million. But it's primarily to be able to maintain or stabilize the rates for our customers. That's the primary purpose. And the financial analysis that's been done has shown that, you know, by building the plant as opposed to staying with Brunswick County Public Utilities as a water provider, that we can provide the water at or below the existing rates for our customers. A secondary benefit is it actually provides an alternate water source for the community in case the straw becomes compromised or the source to that straw becomes compromised. So we see it as improving the overall resiliency of the regional water supply.
What is reverse osmosis?
Well, osmosis is moving water from a higher concentration through a membrane to a lower concentration area. Reverse osmosis is just the opposite of that. You use pressure to basically push the water through a membrane. The membranes collect the solids or the salts, and then you get a finished high-quality water on the downstream side of those membranes.
Is that... John Nichols, reverse osmosis, is that process sort of the highest grade process that we have at this point for removing contaminants from water? Where would that fall on the scale of effectiveness?
Well, it certainly is a very effective treatment process. Something that in a lot of areas where more traditional methods may be difficult to implement, where there may be salt water, you see that used quite a bit. And it is certainly a very good process for treating the water. We use a more traditional method. And we believe that as far as the costs are concerned, RO plants tend to be a bit more expensive to operate. So a traditional method is generally what we believe to be a more cost-effective method.
This recent study, and when I say recent, I'm talking about the end of last year that we mentioned earlier in this discussion by EWG, took a look at hexavalent chromium in drinking water supplies around the United States. And it found that more than 200 million Americans have higher levels of hexavalent chromium than EWG and, I guess, the state of California consider to be safe levels. And California, I think at this point, is the only state that has a set standard for that. Brunswick County had an elevated level, according to this study. The average level was something like four times higher than what California considers to be safe for the public to drink. John Nichols, what would you say to that? Are you concerned about levels of chromium-6 in the water in Brunswick County?
What? I'd say there's quite a bit of difference between the EPA recommendations and the state of California's recommendations. And here in North Carolina, we generally are utilizing the EPA measures. And that's what most utilities across the state and across the nation are utilizing. And so that's the standard we base our process on, and that's what we look at in determining what constitutes safe water.
The EPA, I guess, in 2010 said it was reviewing its process and reviewing its standards, and it has yet to set a standard. I think, Beth Eckert, you can sort of explain that it has a total chromium standard. Tell us about that.
There is a total chromium standard in surface water. I believe it's 100 parts per billion, whereas with the groundwater it's 10. But that total chromium standard that has been set, from the research that I've done and articles that DEQ has published as well, and memos they have, the standard for total chromium was set taking into consideration that the total chromium was most all hexavalent chromium, which is a chrome-6, which is the more toxic portion of a total chromium. So there, you have chrome-3 and chrome-6, which make up total chromium. And it was set taking into account hexavalent chromium more so than the chrome-3.
So. Is this something that – is it possible, Bob Walker, that – the levels for hexavalent chromium, I mean, they're such a source of controversy in terms of what the public safety standard should be, because EPA at this point has said, well, we're reviewing it. And that was 6 or 7 years ago. We know that reverse osmosis does a really good job of removing chromium-6 from the water. But is it possible that this is the influence of industry and lobbying and isn't really about a public safety standard? You know, after Flint, Michigan, and after we hear about these other stories of public water supplies, it can get scary for the average layperson, the person who's relying on utilities to police this.
Yeah, and I think the one thing to keep in mind is, you know, both CFPUA and Brunswick County Public Utilities do meet all, you know, existing standards, and they do a great job. But I think as people become more aware of emerging potential contaminants, we all need to be diligent in investigating, you know, what those levels are and how they might affect the traditional surface water treatment plants that we have in place right now.
John Nichols, how has water treatment changed since you first started in the business as compared to now? Are there things that you've discovered or that, you know, the industry has discovered along the way to get better?
Well, certainly there have been a lot of changes, but Many of the systems operating today are operating along the same methods that they have been operating for many, many years. Brunswick County is one of those, and the methods treat the water to an acceptable level, and it's safe to drink.
Do you have any water filters or reverse osmosis systems in your own home, John Nichols?
No, I do not. I believe we have great water in Brunswick County, and I feel very confident in drinking the water. I don't filter my water at all.
Beth Eckert of CFPUA, from where you sit, how has water treatment evolved over the last decade or two?
Well, I mean, through the years, EPA has a process called UCMR, and that's the Unregulated Contaminant Monitoring List. And every 5 years they do these. And so we have to – EPA is watching emerging contaminants. They're looking to see how prevalent they are. The large utilities around the country are required to do this monitoring. They're not things that are regulated at that point, but they're watching to be sure that we remain protective of public health over the years. We've had three of those processes. UCMR-4 will come about in 2018. But the contaminant that you're talking about, hexavalent chromium, was part of UCMR-3, which is one of the reasons we have data that actually is specific to hexavalent chromium and shows that we're well below any of those, you know, even the California standards, but none, and we provide public health. But as those emerge, you know, Brunswick County and H2GO, I think we all participate in the industry groups, AWWA. We participate, I know CFPUA participates in the Urban Water Consortium, where we fund research as a group of utilities across the state. We watch for those emerging issues. We try to stay ahead of them. That's why I know CFPUA, City of Wilmington, our predecessors, we have always tried to ensure we had that best available technology, because you don't know what's coming down. And you have technology on the back end that increases, so you can measure things that you used to not be able to measure, but you also can treat to levels that you used to couldn't treat with ozone and various things, RO, different processes. So you can measure them, you can treat them, and we always have to be on the lookout for those emerging contaminants to see and follow EPA to see, okay, are they going to set limits for them or not? Do they pose a health issue? But in the process, we continue, as I think we all do, continue to treat our water to exceed limits, and as well as protect public health and have no violations for our public water supplies. So.
Same question about reverse osmosis. Where would you put that on the spectrum of effective water treatments?
I really don't know enough about reverse osmosis to comment.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's an exploration of local drinking water supply. With us to answer your questions, we have Beth Eckert. She's the Director of Environmental Management at Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, or CFPUA. Bob Walker, he's the Executive Director of Brunswick Regional Water and Sewer, or H2GO. And John Nichols is with us today, Director of Brunswick County Public Utilities. They're taking your questions on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And we had a question. Marianne from Leland says, Beth Eckert is talking about chemicals. This was earlier used to treat water. At what point is the water no longer pure, but rather just a mix of chemicals? Won't the chemicals raise the cost? What would you say to Marianne's question, Beth?
Well, there are certain chemicals that are added to the water to bind to the pollutants, to the organics and metals that are in the river, when the water from the river, when we get it. When we get it from the river, it is not pure water. That is why we have to add these chemicals to coagulate. It binds it together and it settles out. And so we treat the water. It is expensive to treat. I mean, you have the various processes in order to ensure that we meet the drinking water regulations going out and we ensure public health and safety, there are some chemicals that we have to add to that. And on the back end, we don't just do testing on the front end. We do testing all throughout the processes. And there are levels of chemicals that are acceptable at the back end where we test for the orthophosphate and other chemicals to see, okay, what is are we meeting the drinking water standards on the back end? And that testing is done throughout the day and throughout the distribution system and the treatment process as well.
And we have something of a lengthy email from Brayton. I'm not going to go into his entire email, but it's based on this American Rivers report that I mentioned at the beginning of this discussion. And he asks, as a collective group acting as keepers for the water quality here in our area, who are you coordinating with to develop support to keep our watersheds clean, to include CAFO buyout legislation and funding? And I guess he's referring to potentially moving some of these concentrated animal feeding operations. There is legislation that has been filed. I think it's sitting in the Rules Committee right now in the General Assembly to move, buy up some of these swine farms and move them in out of the coastal floodplain. John Nichols, do you get involved with pushing for legislation that would affect the water supply here? Or is that something that's sort of out of your...
Yeah, generally not. I'd say that we would be very supportive of legislation that would ensure that our waterways are cleaner, because as a professional working in that environment, it's important to us that the watersheds that provide our drinking water are clean. So reasonable measures that would be introduced would be things that we would support, and acknowledging that there are a lot of different interests within the watersheds.
And when we come back from this break, it's our final segment, your final opportunity to ask a question of our experts, Beth Eckert of CFPUA. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
You can call us with your questions and comments on this Wednesday if you have a question about your local drinking water supply. The number is 910-343-1138. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking today about the drinking water supply. In the face of news that the Cape Fear and Neuse Rivers, major sources for local drinking water, are considered endangered by a national environmental watchdog group, with us now to answer your questions about the drinking water supply in Brunswick County, its health and its future, Bob Walker. He's the executive director of Brunswick Regional Water and Sewer, or H2GO, and John Nichols, director of Brunswick County Public Utilities. Rejoining us is Lawrence Cahoon, professor of biology and marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. He's also a board member of Cape Fear River Watch. And they're taking your questions on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have an email from Jeff Gerken. He, Bob Walker, I believe, is a member of your board.
That's great.
On H2GO. He writes, the level of chromium 6, hexavalent chromium, recommended by the EWG is much lower than the level recommended by the United States EPA. Chromium 6 was the subject of the movie Aaron Brockovich. The chromium levels in the water supply of the town in that movie were more than 7,000 times as high as the trace levels found in the water supplies in Brunswick and New Hanover counties. The map included in the EWG report shows very low levels in our area compared to many other areas of the country. And that is correct. We're talking, of course, about those numbers compared to the California public health goal. We also have a question from Teresa, who asks, please ask your panelists to explain the downside of reverse osmosis, which is the nasty discharge water that is produced. H2GO's proposed plant will dump this water into the Cape Fear River near the Memorial Bridge. How will this affect water quality for fishing, recreation in the remaining portions of the river? John Nichols, can you speak to the process?
I think that being one of H2GO's plant, that may be a better question answered by Bob.
Bob, would you like to tackle that?
Yeah, the concentrated discharge is basically going to be brine water, salty water. And we're going to put it into a tidally influenced brackish river, the Brunswick River. We've done field data and core mix modeling to show that the discharge is going to get back to the background levels within 10 meters of the discharge point. So it won't have any effect on the aquatic life or the river habitat. It'll be non-detrimental to the river.
Professor Cahoon of UNCW, why is hexavalent chromium and the levels which are considered safe for public consumption, why does that seem to be such a moving target?
Bear in mind that the California health goal is a very, very low number for hexavalent chromium compared to the other standards that have been referenced in the discussion. And the basis for that is that it's supposed to prevent one cancer in a million people who consume water with that level of chromium for 70 years. So it's an extraordinarily careful, conservative standard. I would argue from a statistical point of view, it would be impossible to detect that effect. The standards that are currently being debated about or being used in place of an EPA standard, as you've discussed in the last few minutes, the numbers are much bigger. They're much higher than that. But the question then is, how much public safety are we aiming at here? I'm not going to say the California public health goal is a bad one, but it is an extremely conservative one.
Why is it so hard to link chromium-6 to cancer?
It's the same problem we have with anything that is a carcinogen. Number one, we're talking about very low levels, and you're trying to find evidence that above a certain level you get an excess of cancers. That in itself is challenging. Most carcinogens pose the risk of synergistic effects. That is, they interact with other compounds to elevate the risk of cancer. So, you know, in drinking water, you have a mix of things. So would another chemical in drinking water, whatever it is, make the risk from chromium-6 greater? We don't know that. So these are difficult things to do. These are scientifically challenging questions to address.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about our local drinking water supply, where it comes from, how it's treated, how it gets to your house. We have with us today Professor Lawrence B. Cahoon. He is a professor of biology and marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Also with us, John Nichols, director of Brunswick County Public Utilities, and Bob Walker, executive director of Brunswick Regional Water and Sewer, or H2GO. And they're taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Brenda from Southport, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. Professor Cahoon, I have a question for you regarding river quality and the plantings along the banks of the river. I had heard something sometime back that 25 to 50 foot from the river's edge of plantings of trees and keeping our marsh intact affect the quality of our river waters. Would you please address that in view of the high growth of real estate in the area? I think we have entirely too much going on right on the banks of our rivers. And I wonder if you would address that, please.
Right.
Thank you.
You are referring to the practice of installing or maintaining what we call vegetated buffers along stream banks, that not just rivers but streams and all of that. Vegetated buffers, that is allowing the natural vegetation or even planting vegetation, will help slow down runoff along the surface. It will also intercept nutrients in the groundwater. The plants take up the nutrients instead of allowing the groundwater to convey those nutrients directly into the stream channel. These buffers work. The bigger the buffer, the better. On the other hand, you're taking a certain amount of land or property out of an otherwise productive use. And so there's a tension there between the interests of private property owners and the needs of the public, who, after all, own those surface waters. So we're in the midst of a large public debate about that in North Carolina. Buffers are encouraged for agricultural purposes as best management practices. In other situations, I've seen the legislature recently try to relax those buffer regulations that we had put in place in some of the other river basins.
Speaking of the legislature, there is legislation that we know, Bob Walker, moving through the General Assembly that would require a financial study analysis before a reverse osmosis plant could be built. Can you comment on that legislation, how that emerged, and whether you support or oppose that?
Yeah, our board last night just approved a resolution in opposition to House Bill 587. We've vetted this project financially and environmentally over the last 6 years. We've done our due diligence to ensure that the financial analysis shows that this is the best project moving forward for our customers' rates and improve the system resiliency. And we just feel like the legislation was introduced to target our project. It wasn't a legislation that would solve a problem or be a benefit statewide.
How does that target the project? Does it slow it down? Does it make it not feasible? What would it do if it passes?
Well, just the language of it itself, you know, it's only applies to sanitary districts in counties with a certain population threshold. It only really would affect sanitary districts in Brunswick County and Wayne County, and those projects had to be $10 million or more. So obviously, you know, we're the only sanitary district that kind of fits that description right now. But, you know, it would add another layer of financial impact analysis that's really kind of burdensome and unnecessary given all the work that we've done over the last 6 years. And we've put together those financial analysis to approach the LGC for financing.
Why do you think there's resistance for folks who haven't been following this story? I know you're in the midst of it, but why is there resistance to H2GO building its own reverse osmosis plant?
I think some of it, or a lot of it, is misinformation that got out on the project a couple of years ago. You know, there were, you know, rumors and rhetoric about you know, the project was going to be $40 million. It was going to cost the residents $3,000 in assessments, and rates were going to go up 60%. None of which is true. So I think, you know, the misinformation that got spread around. I think there's also some probably political agendas behind some of the opposition.
What do you mean by that?
I think that there probably are other entities that would like to have H2GO's utility and their infrastructure for political purposes.
John Nichols, does Brunswick County Public Utilities have a position on whether H2GO should build its own RO plant?
Well, we believe that that's something that H2GO's board needs to decide in the best interest of their customers and their constituents. But having said that, the cost Brunswick County losing H2GO as a customer does have a financial impact. Brunswick County budgets and funds in order to provide water for H2GO along with the other 10 wholesale customers that we have. So that decision will have an impact on Brunswick County. So we're interested to see what occurs and whether they move forward. We want to make sure that whatever is done in the best interest of not only Brunswick County customers, but H2GO's customers and the interests of Brunswick County citizens.
Brunswick County Public Utilities has to be self-sustaining financially, does it not? Does it get money from the county?
It is an enterprise fund, so it's not part of the general fund, which it receives revenue from taxes. It's completely sustained by its customers.
And so what would it mean if one of the 11, I think you said, wholesale customers went away? How would Brunswick County Public Utilities compensate for that?
Well, Brunswick County has traditionally been very stable financially, but it does have an impact. It would just make us look a little bit harder at the capital projects that we're doing. But it is, H2GO is one of our larger customers. But we have multiple customers and approximately 40,000 retail customers. So while it would have an impact, it would not be something that we could not absorb.
If H2GO were to evaporate, just poor choice of word, but if it went away, would Brunswick County Public Utilities be able to serve all of the current customers? Would they be able to take over that customer base?
Well, currently they're using Brunswick County treated water now, and Brunswick County has had a record of, merging utilities, and so we've been able to do that. I feel confident that we could do that if that is something that H2GO's board elects to do, then we would certainly provide them with a proposal, but that is up to their board to decide.
I want to get to, this is a different question. Ed from Brunswick County says, my drinking water was tested. It had high levels of chlorine. I was told to get a water conditioner, which cost $2,000. Why are the levels so high in the first place? And, of course, we don't know which part of Brunswick County he's from, so don't know if this is an H2GO question or Brunswick Public Utilities. But, Bob Walker, do you want to talk about chlorine in the water?
Yeah, the chlorine that's in the distribution system, you know, it comes from Brunswick County Public Utilities. And I think because we're on the upper end of pulling from their water supplies, our chlorine levels may be a bit higher than what you would get on the south end of the county. John, you want to comment on that?
And I guess I need to talk about our process a little bit. Generally, we're using chloramines, a little bit different process. We do each year we go to chlorines, so I'm not sure exactly when this person is talking about level, but when we are using chlorines, we do inject at several different locations in our system. We maintain what's acceptable to the EPA. I'm not aware of having any significant issues in the system. It would have to be something that I would investigate.
Okay. So he could give you a call and ask you about.
Absolutely. We'd be happy to help him.
Okay. Just briefly, before we go, we have about a minute left. What about the future water supply? Are there any concerns that the Cape Fear River won't be able to supply this burgeoning region over the next some decades? John Nichols.
Well, we certainly look at water as a precious resource that's becoming more scarce. I think the Cape Fear River has got the capacity for many years to come. That's one of the things that we're building a parallel pipeline. But the focus, I think, for all of us is to ensure that water quality is at the forefront and that we do things to ensure that both water quality and water quantity is conserved and to treat it as a precious resource.
And Lawrence Cahoon, last word on that.
We're in pretty good shape overall, except for drought years. And we had two severe droughts, 2002 and 2007, where the adequacy of the supply began to be a concern for us. And as we add people, that's going to continue to grow as an issue.
That's this edition of Coastline. Professor Cahoon, Bob Walker, John Nichols, thank you so much for joining us today. Also, thanks to Beth Eckert of CFPUA. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3 or find it on our HQR app. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.